In a very short time, we've been forced to reevaluate our values. Values related to employment, family, and home. As we come out of two history-making pandemic years, connecting with others is more important than ever. But it's safe to say that the way we can and want to connect has changed. We are not-for-profit professionals supporting adults to live, work, and grow in a rapidly changing world. Connection means that we need to work together to build and put into practice whole and multifaceted plans for our clients so that they can reach their own personal successes. For some of us, life is returning to pre-pandemic norms, where we work out of an office on a set schedule. Others may have no office to return to and may spend working hours on a couch or kitchen table in their own home. And some may be straddling schedules where they sometimes go to the office and sometimes work in their own personal space. These experiences are the same for our clients who are navigating a world that is still deciding what work-life will look like. How can we support them while adapting ourselves? Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. Join us as we talk through relevant topics that support you to do your best work. Grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest Getting Connected podcast. My name is Gay Douglas, and I am your host solo today, as Ashley is busy doing literacy business. It is my pleasure to introduce to you a guest who you may be familiar with, as she joined us a few months ago to talk about bibliotherapy. This is Janine Agnew-Cata, and Janine comes to us from the Literacy Network of...
Durham Region.
Durham Region. I was just about to say that. I always see the acronyms in my head when we talk about literacy networks. It's really spelling each one out. That should be a little bit of a quiz that we do sometime. That might be interesting. So we've asked Janine to come today to talk to us about a wonderful new report that has been developed among three networks around hybrid meetings, the best practices and the experiences of a number of different agencies who are now conducting hybrid meetings. And Janine, first of all, welcome. So glad you can join us today. And maybe the best way to start is to say, what is a hybrid meeting? Maybe you could define that for us to get started.
For sure. Thank you, Gay. So, you know, it's during the pandemic, I think we've all had lots of different experiences with online meetings and, you know, that sort of thing. And so Project Read Waterloo or Project Read Literacy Network, Literacy Northwest, and my network, we're really interested in investigating a little bit about not the online component so much, but as you said, sort of hybrid meetings. And so the first kind of working definition that we've developed through this research that we've conducted is that there are lots of different interpretations and definitions, but to make it easy, we're suggesting that hybrid meetings are basically meetings and events that feature at least one group of in-person or face-to-face people. Those people are attaching themselves or connecting virtually with meeting attendants who are online. So in a nutshell, it's a meeting that's sort of half in person and half online. And there are lots of different ways of configuring these meetings, but it's sort of like a blend of what we've been used to and what we remember, right? From in-person to online. And I think we had some experience prior to the pandemic in my agency with doing a little bit of this, but we really, we sort of had to adjust very rapidly like everyone else did, so.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking before we started chatting that your network and our network mm-hmm. have been working virtually for a number of years at this point. Mm-hmm. And yet, even for us, even though we've been so used to doing things virtually, the stretch to online alone was a bit of a challenge and definitely changed our dynamic and our interactions with others. And I think, so we went from all these wonderful face-to-face meetings with the coffee and the treats and the natural conversation that emerged in a normal conversation face-to-face to suddenly being online only. So when we go to a hybrid model, I guess it's really about combining what works well virtually with what works well face-to-face and ensuring that your audiences, regardless of whether they're attending in person or online, are getting the same experience.
Yeah, for sure.
In a way, to me, that is the greatest challenge.
Yeah, and I think that's been my experience. So I did have one training session prior to the pandemic where my literacy service planning committee sat around a table and we had a workshop facilitator who was virtual and they presented to us from a distance. That was my first experience. And, you know, it came with the same challenges that I think I've experienced during the pandemic or the tail end of the pandemic trying to do hybrid meetings more recently. The biggest one being like technical challenges. So as an example, that was a case where we were all set. We had tested the camera and the smart board. We did a live test session with the workshop facilitator. I was on site and made sure that everything was all set up and ready to go. Showed up at the workshop facility the day of, got everything organized. And then just as the workshop presenter introduced herself, the smart board, which was attached to a server, went into a scheduled Windows update.
Oh, no.
You know, and shut it down. Now, we were able to recover very quickly using a laptop, but that was like my first experience was like, yeah, it's the technical stuff that's right. Always that can be challenging. So yeah. I did a little bit of bibliotherapy at a distance and we've started to experiment with that because now that the pandemic is moving into new phases, there's some participants who are very comfortable being in person. And there are others who are like, not so comfortable. They like the idea of still remaining online. And the reasons why people want to be online is usually in my case, like it seems to be distance or time. They don't want to travel or they might be participating in the session from a great distance. In the case of one of my bibliotherapy sessions, one of our participants is in Philadelphia, so she can only participate online. And others are, you know, they're reluctant to, you know, it's a time factor because you have to travel to and from the venue. And then the people who want to attend in person really want that interaction. They want to see the facilitators in person. They want that face-to-face. So I ran a couple of sessions with Ajax Library where we had some online, some in person. And the technical issues were not as big a factor because we had bought new updated equipment, like smart camera, like a proper hybrid camera. So you can buy specific equipment for these purposes now. The difficulty was around just the tension between the in-person and online people, because they were at odds of why they were there. So the in-person person didn't really want to interact with the camera. She wanted to interact with myself and my co-facilitator, and the people online wanted to interact with us and each other. But it's a bit of a dance, right? Making sure that everybody feels they're being drawn in and that everybody's being responded to, and that when they want to chat through discussion, that they're getting, you know, that you're keeping your side eye on the person sitting next to you and on the camera to see who wants to talk. So it's a really interesting kind of ballet of, you know, kind of prioritizing both groups at the same time, recognizing that they kind of have competing interests in how they've chosen to participate. And of course, we know from the pandemic, the way we do in-person meetings changes the flavor of in-person meetings, right? Like it's not as spontaneous or as unscripted as in-person interactions might be, where someone says something or brings a book or shows you something and all of a sudden the meeting can go in new and exciting ways. And I find online things tend to be more truncated and maybe scripted because there's none of that spontaneity anymore. Or at least maybe you have a different.
No, I'd agree completely. One of the reasons, I guess, being the typical way that we're set up online where if you want to speak, you have to be recognized, or people may not even see you, depending on how they've configured their screen. So the idea of impetuous and spontaneous conversation arising doesn't seem to happen nearly as much, I think, for those reasons. And I think that I did a single hybrid session, and it was a fantastic learning experience. And I'll share that, and then I want to hear more about your experience and about the report that the three networks worked on. What I learned, as you have reinforced, Janine, is there is no replacement for good technology, dependable technology, clear screens, clear microphones, the ability for those people at home who are tuning in from a distance to have that as much as is possible, to have that same experience. And I think in my mind, I was so intent on ensuring that there was equity in the conversation. Like you, we rehearsed, we made sure the technology was up to date, et cetera, et cetera. However, the day of, we had a similar experience, which was that suddenly what worked 24 hours earlier did not. Thank goodness there was a handy tech person. I guess that might be a little hint I would share, is always have that backup individual or a plan B at the very least, for whether it be for equipment, technology, or skill that may be required. So that was my first lesson, is all the best plans, no matter how much rehearsing, sometimes a hybrid meeting may have a challenge or two due to technology.
For sure.
Carry on from there, Janine. I want to hear more about your experience. I'll tell you as we move forward and we talk about what might work and what might be some emerging leading practices. I do have one that I'd like to share, but for now, let's go back to other things to keep in mind in terms of planning your hybrid meeting.
For sure. Well, it's pretty clear from the report, because there was a survey component, that about a third, approximately, of networks that participated will anticipate that they most likely either yes, or if expenditures allow, will run, future hybrid meetings. I think it's just a byproduct of where we are with funding, with the configuration of our communities, with the way technology, with how people have learned to adapt to online meetings. I don't think the online component is going away. So, we're going to have to adapt to the reality that online meetings are going to just be part of what we offer. There are lots of really good reasons. So as much as there are always challenges, I mean, in-person meetings are prohibitive, cost prohibitive. They require space and facility access. You have to have travel allowances. People have to be willing to travel long distance. So I sort of look at hybrid meetings in the context of our other meetings. It's just, there's never a perfect solution to meetings. There's, trade-offs in either way. I find, and I'm glad you sort of shared your experience, because it makes me sort of think about the nuances with hybrid meetings, because it can come down to really interesting things like, are you as the facilitator in person or are you online? In one case, I was a participant in person. In one case, I was a facilitator in person. But being a facilitator online and having people in person is also a possibility in my particular region, where I might not be able to make it to a meeting. I'd still be facilitating the meeting, but some of my attendees might be in person.
I didn't even consider that. That really throws a bit
of a wrinkle
that you have to manage. In other words, the people in person don't have a facilitator in person.
Yeah,
as you're virtual, as are many of your other participants.
That is a possibility. I mean, I don't think that's how most people choose to go about it, but it is possible, because I have programs that have technical support and they have hybrid meeting equipment. And if some of the people can assemble, say, in Bowmanville, but I'm in Pickering, I can probably still facilitate a meeting. But what I can't do is moderate the meeting in person. So of course, those sidebar conversations, it becomes a bit of a challenge. It's probably not, as a best practice, the optimal. But you know, we have remote networks who may find themselves in a position where that's their option, that maybe they have two or three programs in a little area that want to meet in person, and the network ED is not, or the LSP coordinator is not, going to go out to that remote community. They're going to convene the meeting online. So it's, you know, it's I think the foreplanning to me is what always pops to the top of my head, is that it's not that it's onerous, it's that you have to sort of think through the scenarios. I had a scenario with an individual who decided when she got in person and arrived at the library that she didn't want to be on screen. That's a problem, because then the people who were on screen could only heard this disembodied voice. That doesn't work well. So there's lots to think through, like getting consent for the people who are going to be on screen, making sure they understand you can't sit outside of the field of vision of the camera. You have to be, you know, everybody has to be on camera. So you either have to be visible by the hybrid camera, or you have to be at home on a camera. So I'm not a fan of people turning cameras off on an online meeting. I don't think it's a good practice. That's just my personal bias.
I agree.
And again, the technical stuff, like you have to have backup. Now, there's lots of exciting equipment that's making it easier. And the document that we created that's available on Project Reads website, I mean, it sort of talks a little bit about some of the camera options specifically, because there are now cameras that do a better job of tracking people who are talking, or can pan wide enough to capture a room. And you know that works. I have one of those cameras. I have a Logitech Connect camera that has a very wide field of vision, so I can fit about 8 people in that panoramic view. And it doesn't pan to each individual. That's a different type of camera, but those are also available where the camera pivots to the person who's talking. What's interesting is when you work with American Sign Language, people who are dependent on ASL, there's a little bit more work there, just like online, where you have to pin the screen and you have some steps. The careful planning of accommodating for American Sign Language is an important part when you're doing hybrid meetings, because that's another piece that you have to sort of logically think through, and you have to be willing to work with your partners to find out what's going to work for them.
Wow. So many things to think about. And as you were chatting, I was making some notes here based on what you're saying, and also what I learned in my single experience. And that was how important the facilitator was. Some people would be challenged, I think, to lead a hybrid meeting, regardless of whether they were online or in person, regardless of which end they were at, if they are not comfortable with and experienced with facilitation, period, and making sure that people felt included, as well as the way the agenda is structured, to ensure that, and the way the room is set up. I know in the single meeting that we did, we ensured that we didn't have the fancy camera that had a panoramic view. So if people were to speak, they actually had to go up to a podium where my laptop was open so that they could be seen by the people at home who were tuning in that way, and also the people in front of them in the room. So we ensured that we had a semicircle facing the podium, so that once again, it was about that direct communication, whether or not you were getting it through your computer screen or in the room. Now that worked well in terms of setup. I did tease people at the meeting that what didn't work was the people in person got all kinds of wonderful coffee and snacks. And the people at home were not able to participate in that. That is one of the, we made a bit of a joke at it, about it, but it's true. That's part of the face-to-face experience as humans that we do enjoy, right? Is the coffee break.
For sure. And I think you've touched on something that's really important. That is, if it's much more work probably from the facilitator's point of view to manage a hybrid meeting, because it's not the content anymore that you have to worry about presenting, it's the participant management aspect. So I found it easier to work with a co-facilitator who you know, we're sharing the responsibility of presentation and participant management. So while one is presenting, the other's keeping an eye on what's happening with the in-person, and they're, you know, it's a bit of an orchestration, because, you know, when you're in person, you're just focused on presenting and you want to read the room, right? And when you're online, you don't even, reading the room becomes less critical, because you've only got one way of interacting with people, and there's less, I find there's just less spontaneity, right? You're presenting canned content, and it's a little bit less off this, you know, by the seat of your pants, because there's no activity. But with hybrid, you've got to be, like you said, you've got to be watching for whether people are engaged. Are you making eye contact with the people on the screen? Are you making eye contact with the people in the room? Are you, you know, panning back and forth to make sure that people feel that they're being engaged with? And in the meantime, you've got like perhaps a group of people on your screen who you're trying to keep track of. So it's a lot. That's why I think one of the best practices is to keep the meetings brief, specific to a purpose. I don't know. I mean, I'm very curious as time rolls on how much, you know, if hybrid meetings work better for specific types of meetings, like if it's an informational meeting, if you're presenting content, versus like a brainstorming meeting, which may be difficult or chaotic, because of course the way people communicate on camera versus the way they communicate in a room is different, because people in a room are reading each other's physical cues and they're jumping in, but people online tend to wait for that silence before they jump in. And so it's a lot to consider.
I think the research is
really important.
Is key. And I think as we become more familiar with these types of meetings, within and beyond certainly the literacy or adult education fields, the more we learn, the more we will understand which meetings that this approach is conducive to and effective, and for those which don't even try it. It's part of a team building session, and someone said they wanted to join virtually into that team building day. And so that was, they wanted us to provide a hybrid approach to the day. That wouldn't have worked. And I like your idea. Brief is better. A long meeting with people in person and people at home, and the double duty that the facilitator plays, both watching individuals, ensuring that agenda is happening and on time, and also worrying about the technical issues. I can't imagine a long meeting.
No. A co-facilitator, I think, is really helpful. Or, you know, someone who can handle the technical aspects. There's certainly a lot to consider in terms of the meeting content, the format, purpose, the type of equipment, the room setup. These are all, you know, things critical that you have to kind of carefully plan. Yeah. And there are lots of good partners that may be able to help with that in people's communities. For me personally, consulting with some of my local public libraries has been really valuable, because most public libraries moved to almost exclusive online program offerings. And some of them have developed really quite elaborate and sophisticated studios. So in my region, not every library, but at least three of our local libraries have pretty pretty nicely updated kind of video studios that they've created that you that I can use, or any other member of the community can use. And it's pretty low cost, you know, where you can go and you can either borrow their technology. They might even have a hybrid meeting camera you can borrow for use at home, or, you know, you can use their studio. Some of them have like sound booths, recording studios. They have professional quality microphones and speakers, mic stands, cables, studio lighting, green screens. Like that's
good to
resource.
Know. I hadn't considered libraries as
partners. Yeah. And some of them are better at it. Like, obviously every library is a little different, but in my region, it's been very interesting to see how they've created that as part of their makerspace or library of things approach to delivery. And so, yeah, I can go into Pickering at my local library, can ride my bicycle over, and I can go upstairs and use their almost professional quality sound studio and do a hybrid meeting there with their assistants. There's a small charge for it, but they provide me with an IT person and I can use the room and use their big, they have a big overhead 360 camera and a big smart board and have a pretty nice setup. So, you know, those are, you know, that's one, I think, you know, we've costed out in the report what some of the high, low, medium costs are related to adapting to hybrid equipment, because there's a little bit of equipment you need to be cognizant of. And much of what's in that list at all of the different levels can be borrowed from some libraries for sure.
Very interesting. I wonder if other educational organizations such as colleges might also have those resources they'd be willing to share.
Oh, I'm sure. I think a lot of larger, well, certainly post-secondary institutions have had to develop this type of approach to deliver programming over the last couple of school years to college and university students. So those are also good sources. You know, some school boards as well have tried to create the similar type of approach and may have. So I think, you know, you can purchase equipment, but you can also look in your community to see who might be able to loan you out that equipment, because it's, you know, the cost runs, you know, for a low cost, when you consider all things, it can cost you up to, you know, $1,000, you know, $800 to $1,000 just to get up and moving. And then, you know, the cost is lower each year after that, but the initial purchase of equipment can be up to $1,000. You know, if you can avoid that cost by borrowing equipment, that's even better. So I've always found my libraries to be great too. When I've asked them for a piece of equipment, sometimes they'll actually say, well, we don't have one, but we'll get one. So you never know. You might have a great library partner out there who can really help you out.
And they may have access to resources, you know, to fulfill their mission
for sure.
That you can borrow or partner with. So I'm going to share my one little hint that people said they appreciated. And then I'd like to hear more about the report, including the name of the report, what the sort of areas in the report included and who participated in it, and where people can find it. Because I think it's an awesome resource for anyone looking at doing hybrid meetings. It was a little thing, but people told me afterwards, as I gathered feedback, I think that's important too. Maybe we should mention, since this is a new way that people are communicating and doing business, that we really should be evaluating whether it's working or not, because maybe it may be trendy or it may be efficient to do it, but is it effective? That's really, I think, worth asking. We used it for a community consultation process where people were commenting specifically on what their program did and what might constitute a good referral to their program. So it was, I think it was a good exercise and fair to use a hybrid approach, because it did focus on one person at a time representing their agency. Everyone knew exactly what they were going to provide in that time frame. They paused between speakers, but this was a little thing that, as I say, people liked it. And it was the fact that instead of going around the room and having individuals come up and speak, and then having the people who were joining virtually speak, we would have one person who was in the room and then call on one person who was joining virtually, then another person in the room and another person joining virtually. I think it really contributed, and people told me so, to a sense of equity and access that they might not have had if we sort of split them into here. Well, let's hear from the people who are really here, and then let's hear from those of you joining us from a distance. So I thought I'd share that.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, Gay, I think that's a really critical piece, is making sure that all participants feel that they're a valued participant, that there is not a preferred group. And that's always hard, but I think that's crucial, right? That everybody feels like they're a valuable and important member of whatever's happening, and that their modality choice has nothing to do with the value of their participation. And the idea of collecting feedback, I think, is crucial. I mean, I think that's the best thing to do is if you're trying something new is to just keep checking in with people and asking what's working, what's not working. How can we do this differently? You know, how does this feel, or what's the impact of this on you as a participant? So that's a great, those are a couple of great, great observations for sure. Now you were asking a little bit about the report. I'm happy to talk a little bit about that. So we wrote the how-to of hybrid meetings. So myself, Literacy Network Northwest, and Project Read Literacy Network Waterloo Wellington collaborated to just do, you know, a little bit of an overview about what exactly is happening with hybrid meetings. So we developed, looked at a couple of different definitions and settled on one that we thought was appropriate. We did a little two or three question survey, just asking the provincial support organizations and regional literacy networks about hybrid meetings, who's run them, whether they're going to continue running them. You know, did participants feel that the meeting went well? So that was very helpful because it gave us a sense of how entrenched this type of meeting is going to be in our communities. And I think it's an indicator that we've got maybe 25% to 30% of people who may well be continuing on with this experiment with hybrid meetings. So not everybody perhaps, but certainly some of us. We investigated some best practices. So we sort of looked high and low to determine what do you really need to be thinking of, you know, in terms of hybrid meetings in general. And, you know, anything that goes from just the way you set up the meeting, making sure that chat is enabled, making sure that everybody can hear you, everybody can see you, identifying an appropriate venue, talking about what you do with technical support, what kinds of equipment needs you might need to consider. Because again, like, it's not as straightforward as being in a room with a paper flip chart. That's not a thing anymore. You've got to have a different approach to that in hybrid meetings. You know, providing structure, designing your meetings, and ensuring that, you know, everybody's got the appropriate information in advance. Again, a big emphasis on evaluation and feedback, you know, making sure that everybody is not just evaluating the meeting itself, but the meeting methodology, so that they have that opportunity to share. We talked a little bit about how hybrid meetings can meet the needs for boards of directors and annual general meetings. So that was a big thing. A lot of people experimented with hybrid, but it was specifically to facilitate, like, for instance, board meetings. That's been a big need that's occurred. And so people are looking at that as something that may stay in place after, you know, when things go back to more in person. And there's certainly legislative and the Ontario Nonprofit Corporations Act implications. So you have to be aware of that as you're going through the ANCA process. We decided to look a little bit about some of the best technologies. So what kind of platforms work best, or what's available? What kind of cameras are out there? Because there's, you know, there's lots of really cool stuff happening in cameras. What type of microphones? Like, so a lot of us are using ear pods, or we're using just the speaker in our computer, but there's lots of other types of microphones out there that you might want to think about if you're doing anything for a duration. We've given you also some stuff around smart boards and monitors. And a little bit of, like, maybe kind of, you know, kind of product examples, so that you can click on a link and look at what the product example looks like. So we tried to throw in a couple of those. We definitely talk about room setups, partnerships with libraries, and we were able to cost out what a low, medium, high, and then very high budget is for conducting a hybrid meeting. So if you had to buy all the equipment, and you had to pay on a monthly basis for the platform, what are we looking at as a financial investment? Just broad strokes, so that people aren't sitting there thinking it's out of my range, right? Because there's a huge difference in cost. It goes from relatively reasonable annual carrying costs and a preliminary expenditure investment of maybe $800 to, like, unlimited, where you've got, like, contractors coming in and installing cameras in your ceiling, and, you know, you've got some really crazy furniture that's got, like, plugins and speakers attached. So there's lots of options for people to consider, and again, you know, emphasizing partnerships and with other entities that already have these things in place. So we felt like it was a really good starting document for people who are just wrapping their minds around, what do I do with a hybrid? What kind of things do I need to be considering for a hybrid meeting? And obviously, as time goes on and we develop more expertise, there'll be new findings. So it's by no means exhaustive, but it gives us a really great starting point to look at some of the key considerations in hybrid meetings.
Well, I think a lot of people will benefit from that document very much. I have one thing to add before you tell us where that document can be found. And that is that here at Literacy Link Niagara, we have actually developed policy for hybrid meetings. Because what we found as we put them out as possibilities, that the bulk of our people were still comfortable, for example, for literacy service planning meetings, the bulk of the attendees still wanted to do the virtual meeting. So then we had to question, is it worthwhile? Is it effective? Is it cost effective and time effective? Since Ashley and I are both part-time, to spend the time and the effort and the cost of putting together a virtual meeting, if most people would be content sticking with virtual. For example, our first virtual or hybrid meeting that we put out for our literacy service planning group went out to 14 people, and one person said they wanted to attend in person. So it made no sense for us to have a hybrid meeting. We went purely virtual. So I think it's kind of important that be part of the planning as well. At what point do you decide not to make it hybrid and to make it either totally in face-to-face, depending on the importance, sensitivity, the timing, and everything else that may go into making that decision, or making it, let's just stick with a virtual meeting. It may be most effective. And certainly, given that I don't know anyone whose time is not stretched, people's ability to take the time to travel to the meeting or to take the time to plan that hybrid meeting really needs to be considered.
Yeah, and I think that's a good rule of thumb too, to make sure that you're doing hybrid meetings with a strong sense of what your participants want, right? If there are reasons why your participants want this, that's probably the best guiding light terms of a hybrid meeting. Because if you as a facilitator are making that decision unilaterally, it's probably not the focus to spotlight on. I think it's important to have hybrid meetings because your group has a need to host the meeting that way. Maybe some people are just, you know, they're dying to meet in person, or maybe it's a staff team that they're already in a location. So it just makes more sense for them to be in a room together than on individual computers, but everyone else. So yeah, you have to be very cautious about not overusing it and not, applying it in the wrong context, right?
Yeah, I think we made some assumptions and we were proved wrong. It might have been also my own bias for enjoying the face-to-face meetings and missing the face-to-face meetings, but apparently that wasn't shared by most of the people in that particular group. But of course, every group is a little different. So,
for sure, yeah, it's a mad experiment. Every time every group is going to be a little different. So yeah, it's one of those things that I think has lent itself to proving how resilient programs, agencies, facilitators are by just trying out things. Right, that's all we can do.
Right. And so people are forgiving. So I guess my advice to people thinking about hybrid meetings is, you know, read the report, see what others have shared around their challenges and their successes, but give it a try because people are so forgiving.
Oh, 100%. I think we work in a field where people are predominantly well-intentioned, right? They sincerely want to do a good job and they sincerely want to connect with their peers in ways that are suitable and appropriate. So I think that, you know, we just go with what works and we try things out. I'm hoping that people will find the report really helpful. I know that I certainly loved having the opportunity to reflect on some of this content and was really excited about the opportunity to work with the other networks on this. It is housed on Project Read Waterloo Wellington's website. So you can find it at projectread.ca under the resources section. They have lots of really cool stuff, and our report is now posted up on their website. They were the leading partner, so they've done a great job of assembling the committee and pulling together the content and publishing a really nice looking document too. So I'm hoping that people will find it useful.
Super. We will also be including that link in the notes that will accompany the podcast. So I guess we can wrap it up for today. I wanted to once again thank our special guest, Janine Agnew-Cata, because she came in to do this for us on very little notice. And yet she's done an awesome job of sharing this information, which I know will be of great value to the field. So we'll sign off for today until the next time when we get connected once again. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.